Hey everyone, this is Jimmy O'Brien from John Boy Media. I want to quickly tell you about my podcast. It's called Jimmy's Three Things. Episodes come out every Tuesday, and for 30 minutes, I dive into three stories in Major League Baseball that I want to talk about, or I do a stat deep dive. Sometimes I create my own stats. It gets weird. It's now your go-to podcast for staying up to date and in the weeds with Major League Baseball. No topic is off limits or too small. Bad umpires, great pitcher-catcher duos, new rules, old rules, three things that I want to talk about. Listen to Jimmy's Three Things on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Joe Gatto.
I'm Steve Byrne.
We are Two Cool Moms.
We certainly are.
And guess where we could find us now?
Oh, I don't know. The iHeart Podcast Network?
That's right. We're an official iHeart Podcast, and I'm super excited about it.
I am too. I thought Two Cool Moms was such a fun podcast, but now it's even more funner and cooler and heartier.
That's right. It's more iHeartier.
I knew it! Check your heart rate. We're here at iHeart.
Yeah, you can find us wherever you listen to your podcasts or on the iHeart Radio app.
We think of Franklin as the doddering dude flying a kite in the rain.
Benjamin Franklin is our subject for a new season with Walter Isaacson.
He's the most successful self-made business person in America.
A printer, a scientist, founding father, but maybe not the guy we think we know.
Franklin casts his lot on the side of revolution, and it's another thing that splits the family apart.
Listen to On Benjamin Franklin with Walter Isaacson on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Michael Rappaport, and I have been professionally podcasting for 10 years. The podcast game has changed so much, and if you're looking for the most disruptive podcast in the world, then subscribe to the I Am Rappaport Stereo Podcast today. We're talking sports, politics, pop culture, entertainment, and anything that catches my attention. Listen to the I Am Rappaport Stereo Podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We have an update on the FBI entrapment case, and it's not good. We have Julie Kelly coming on tonight about that. We have Big Tech, a platform you may use, getting involved in the elections. We have more than I could even lay out here, including my friend James Lindsay. Where's he been? All that's coming up on I'm Right. Where's Joe Biden? I know we've asked that a lot. But pause and think about this for a moment. We just had the Afghanistan anniversary. We have gigantic things happening with the Trump raid, the FBI raid of Trump at Mar-a-Lago. We're in a recession. I mean, no one even talks about that anymore. That was in and out of the news in 5 seconds. We're in the middle of a recession. Huge things going on in the world. And nobody can seem to get the president of the United States of America on camera. To date, he's taken 151 days of vacation. That surpasses everyone. Obama, Trump, Bush, everybody. Joe Biden is always gone. Every weekend, he takes off to Delaware. He's been on vacation now. Do you remember, speaking of Afghanistan, do you remember as Afghanistan was falling, we couldn't find Joe or his press secretary or the Secretary of State Blinken because they were all on vacation. It's the vacation presidency, apparently. Oh, and did I mention? We are in the middle of a national crisis when it comes to the Department of Justice. And I know there are a bunch of you communists who hate watch. I don't care which side you're on. When over 50% of the American public think the Department of Justice is an evil weaponized arm of the Democratic Party, that is a national crisis that must be addressed by both sides. You understand that pushes a nation to the brink of disaster. When people feel that justice cannot be had, you are officially on the clock as your nation having some kind of horrible event. So we have all these things going on and nobody can find Joe Biden. Joe, where are you? And remember, he campaigned like this. It's wild how lax, well, not lax, let's be honest, how nefarious our media is in this country. That they let him get away with this on the campaign. They let him get away with it in the presidency because everyone knows the president isn't a fully functional adult. He has to be hidden for days, weeks on end so he can rest up before he mumbles his way through another press conference, if you even want to call it that. They told me to call on Jill. Where's Jill? Gosh. But not that anything important's going on. I mean, we just had a gigantic ruling today that somehow makes the FBI look worse than they did yesterday. Do you remember this guy? This FBI guy who stepped up to the microphone and talked about, well, the FBI.
The FBI does not do easy. To be clear, the brutality the American people watched with shock and disbelief on the 6th will not be tolerated by the FBI. The men and women of the FBI will leave no stone unturned in this investigation.
Wow. Man, that's good news. I feel better with these warriors for justice leading the way. Joining me now, Julie Kelly, my friend, author of the book January 6th. If you want to know just how insidious these people are, I highly recommend reading it. Julie, man, that guy looks like a real fighter for law and justice. He's an inspiration. Who is he?
He does. You know, they don't do easy, the FBI. No. That is Stephen D'Antuono, who is the head of the FBI field office in Washington, D.C. Now, before he got that stint and he got his nice little podium and he got to lecture all of us about how he was going to break down doors to hunt down all the trespassers from January 6th, that was fresh off the heels of his managing the Whitmer FedNapping hoax while he was head of the Detroit FBI field office. So oddly, he got a big promotion after those arrests were announced in October 20. He got a plum assignment by Christopher Wray, taking over the Washington field office, where he has been for the past almost 2 years, rounding up January 6ers. They arrested two men from Illinois today, now almost 20 months later. And of course, then putting people like Peter Navarro in leg chains and, you know, ransacking Mar-a-Lago.
Okay, well, we have an update on all that from today. It's honestly an awful update, but I'll allow you to elaborate. What happened today, Julie?
In the second trial of two men accused of conspiring to kidnap Gretchen Whitmer, two men that a jury could not reach a verdict on in April, in a stunning short amount of time, returned all guilty verdicts for two men, Adam Fox and Barry Croft, convicted of conspiring to kidnap Gretchen Whitmer, build a weapon of mass destruction, and then a separate firearms charge for Mr. Croft. This was just an egregious miscarriage of justice. The judge, Judge Yonker in the Western District of Michigan, put his entire body on the scale, on the side of the government scale of justice. And this is the result from this jury. Just absolutely stunning.
Okay, elaborate on that for me, Julie. What did this judge do? How did he get this verdict?
Well, what he did a number of things to side with the government, and this started early on, even at the April trial. Jesse, there are 200 plus communications between FBI handlers and their informants detailing this roadmap of how this FBI entrapment scheme was put together. The judge in both trials called it hearsay, refused to let the jury see it. This trial, he acted more egregiously, worse than the first trial. Get this, Jesse. This never happens in criminal cases. And Yonker admitted he's never done this in court before. He limited defense attorneys' time to cross-examine two of the most critical government witnesses. Those were two men who pleaded guilty under tremendous pressure from the DOJ, pleaded guilty to the kidnapping charge. These were the two men that the remaining two defendants allegedly conspired with to put together this plot. They were limited, each defense attorney, to 25 minutes of each of the government witnesses. It was absurd. And both defense attorneys, as you can imagine, strongly objected to what the judge did, said it was a violation of their client's 6A rights. Of course it was, unconstitutional and unfair, but also prevented the jury from hearing the full reasons why these two men pleaded guilty and to expose their lack of relationship with the other two defendants and how they could put this scheme together. And then there was another issue. Defense attorneys filed a motion with Judge Yonker. One of the jurors told his coworkers that he was predisposed to find these men guilty no matter what. They wanted this juror removed after they received this information. Judge Yonker refused to remove this juror, met with him privately in his chambers, outside of the view of prosecutors and defense attorneys, ordered all the filings related to this juror under seal, kept him on the jury. And Jesse, I'm hearing reports this was the guy who was the foreperson for this jury.
Oh.
So something really, really shady happened here.
Okay, so just, I want to recap this just so I understand it, Julie. The two alleged co-conspirators, they limited the amount of time the defendant's attorneys could question these guys, and the clearly biased juror who wanted to convict the guys anyway got a private meeting with the judge, his record sealed, and he led the actual jury as jury foreman. I know, because I was jury foreman at one point in time in my younger life. Do I have all that about right?
You have it all right. The final piece is unconfirmed, but that's what I'm hearing from other people who are close to this trial, that not only was this juror not removed, he was the foreperson. And Jesse, let's put this in context. The first trial was 3 weeks. The jury was out for 4.5 days before they returned not a single conviction. Two men were acquitted. These two men, Adam Fox and Barry Croft, had a hung jury. Fast forward, this trial is 8 days. There's two fewer defendants who are the alleged co-conspirator because they're found not guilty. The jury comes back in less than 7 hours with all guilty verdicts on every single count, including weapons of mass destruction. I mean, none of this adds up. I'm expecting an appeal. I've asked the defense attorneys to confirm that. I'm sure that they will be appealing this for a variety of reasons, but mostly how this judge conducted himself in this trial.
Julie, I want to nail down on a detail here, if you don't mind, the weapon of mass destruction. And the reason that perked my ears up is you and I, you've been on the show, you've been gracious enough to come on several times to keep us updated on this. I remember you told me about the FBI planting some kind of explosive in a guy's truck and then busting the guy with the explosive in a truck. Is that the weapon of mass destruction we're talking about? Or do I have my facts all messed up? Please correct me if I'm wrong.
You never have your facts messed up. Of course, you are 100% right. So this was materials. Now keep in mind, the FBI, when this group was not congealing, when they had no kidnapping plot, FBI introduced the guy in September of 2020, undercover FBI agent, to act as an explosive expert trying to sell materials to these targets to build a bomb to blow up a bridge outside of Gretchen Whitmer's vacation cottage. Well, what had happened before is Barry Croft, this defendant, had some materials. He's a long-haul truck driver. He likes fireworks. Had sort of these random objects together in a bag. It's taken by one of the FBI informants. Another informant repackages this in a separate bag. Who knows what else they put in there? Put this in Barry Croft's truck. He drives it back to Delaware. When he's arrested and the FBI raids his home and his truck, guess what they find? The bag. So there was no way these two men live 800 miles apart. They met for the first time in June of 2020 at a militia conference organized by one of the key informants. These two guys couldn't put together a lemonade stand, let alone build a bomb and go kidnap Gretchen Whitmer and put her in a boat and send her out into the middle of Lake Michigan. This is how preposterous this plan was. But here's what the judge said last week, Jesse. He told the jury, it doesn't matter if this crime is inconceivable or impossible to commit. It doesn't mean that they didn't conspire to try to commit the crime. This is the sort of thing that was coming out of the judge's mouth last Friday before he dismissed the jury and they first gathered yesterday to deliberate. Just crazy.
Grief. Julie, I know you got a busy day. Thank you so much for making some time for us tonight. I appreciate you.
Always. Thanks, Jesse.
You nervous yet? You should be. That may have made you uncomfortable, but she's right. Golly. All right. Speaking of uncomfortable, you remember how big tech, they did some work in the last election. We'll put it that way. They did some work. You didn't think they were done with that, right? There's another big tech company you're not thinking about getting ready to get involved in this election, upcoming and future elections, and we're going to talk about that next. Before we talk about that, are you stuck in a timeshare and you're mad about it? Don't feel dumb. You should understand getting into a timeshare and then getting stuck, you can't get out because of the fine print, that's the norm. You're not the exception here. You're not some dummy who got taken to the cleaners. That's what these timeshare companies do, many of them. You're not stuck, though. I don't care what they've told you on the phone, how many calls you've made, emails you've sent. Oh, you can't do anything. You're not stuck. You're a phone call away from freedom. Lone Star Transfer has a 99% success rate getting people out. 16,000. More than 16,000 timeshare people have gotten out because of Lone Star Transfer. Family company. They'll take care of you. Make one phone call. They guarantee it. They guarantee they'll get you out in writing and in a specific time frame. Call 844-310-2646. 844-310-2646. Or go to LoneStarTransfer.com. We'll be back.
Each morning, the President of the United States receives a highly classified briefing on the most important issues facing the country. It's called the President's Daily Brief, or PDB. It's delivered by America's spies and analysts. Well, now you can hear your very own PDB in the form of a podcast hosted by me, Brian Dean Wright, a former CIA operations officer. Each morning at 6 a.m. Eastern, I'll bring you 15 to 20 minutes of the most important issues facing the country, giving you the critical intelligence and analysis you need to start your morning.
Social media, getting involved in elections. I know you're going to be shocked by that, right? That's stunning. Everyone saw what Twitter did, Facebook did in 2020, censoring stories about Hunter Biden, Facebook sinking a fortune into election workers. We'll just put it that way. Election workers across the country. But you didn't think they were going to stop, did you? You didn't think they did all that and then they went back to the drawing board and said, oh, guys, we screwed up. Dang it. Let's not do that again. No. It's foot on the gas time. And it's not just Twitter and Facebook. Joining me now, Emily Jashinsky, outstanding culture editor for The Federalist. I read everything she does. Emily, there's another social media company out there. Parents, kids, they love watching little videos on it, even though it's Chinese spyware. What is it and what are they doing?
That's right. Yeah, TikTok is probably best described as Chinese spyware. It is owned by ByteDance, which is based in Beijing. It is a Chinese company, and it actually employs dozens of members of the Chinese Communist Party. It employs people who currently work for state media, even people who work for specifically TikTok, who currently work for state media in China. The app unveiled a new elections center just last week. They bragged about it in a press release. They had help from American institutions, Ballotpedia, a group that helps members serving in the military vote, the National Association of Secretaries of State all helped them on this. But what that does, anyone who clicks on their election center, clicks register to vote, puts their location in, is giving basically TikTok and China, if they want it, this detailed voter profile that can be used to manipulate votes. Say you are a likely voter in Arizona who consumes a lot of conservative content. Well, if China wanted to mess with the election, they could access the algorithm, they could access TikTok and basically upregulate certain content that might depress voter turnout for the left, for Democrats, or for Republicans. We're just putting a lot of trust in a hostile foreign government not to use that power and not to use that data because ByteDance says they wouldn't allow it.
Emily, I don't use TikTok for a couple of reasons. One, because I'm old. I'm 41 and I refuse to advance with any more technology in my life. And two, because it's Chinese spyware. But I know I'm not alone in being too old to understand a lot of this stuff. What are you talking about when you mean manipulate what people see? Okay, so I'm Jesse Kelly and I did my election thing and they know where I live and they know I'm to the right of Genghis Khan. Now, what can TikTok do to me to mess with me?
Right. So especially if you're younger and you're sort of naive to all of this, they could amplify certain information. So videos, for instance, that let's say China decided to go into Taiwan tomorrow, just hypothetically, let's say they did that. They could be sending pro-Chinese content. They could be censoring anti-American or pro-American content and pushing anti-American content on particular people through those videos. So they can tweak the algorithm to make sure that when you're scrolling on your phone and you're you're going through all these TikTok videos, and maybe you're someone who consumes a lot of political content. Actually, a lot of Americans say they now use TikTok as a source of news. So it's not just some funny cat video app. A lot of people are using this for news and for political and cultural conversation. China can make sure they're giving you those videos and sending the other videos out of your algorithm and not delivering them. So to the extent that you're in this sort of sphere of influence and this universe created by the information that's delivered to you, China has control over it if they want it. They can look at that data. The members of the party that are working for ByteDance and have TikTok as part of their portfolio can absolutely exercise their powers if they wanted to manipulate the information very particular Americans are seeing on the app.
Emily, can you explain this to me? Because it blows me away. We know this is Chinese spyware. Everyone knows this. Left, right, middle, everyone knows this at this point in time. Yet you just mentioned Ballotpedia, secretaries of state joining with this organization. Are they paid off? Are they stupid? Why?
They're stupid. And again, like TikTok is also a huge, they're completely stupid. And TikTok is a huge source of ad revenue right now because it does reach so many people. So a lot of corporations are totally sucked in by the money. You can reach very specific demographics with advertising on TikTok. So there's money on it right now as well. But it blows my mind. I'm here in Washington. I talk to people about this. I honestly have no idea how this has been allowed to continue. Joe Biden, a few months after getting in office, cancels Trump's attempt to ban TikTok outright. And the Biden administration is doing absolutely nothing about it, despite the fact that they claim to care so much about election integrity, about Russia interfering in the 2016 election. This is just happening right under everyone's noses. Obviously, a lot of people don't want to get on the wrong side of, you know, all of the millions of Americans who are using TikTok every day and think it's fine. So it's a sort of a political liability. They don't want to implicate people in, you know, allowing China to spy on us, but they should, because that's what's happening at this point, and everybody who's involved is complicit, even if they think it's harmless entertainment. We really should know better by now. And I'm with you, Jesse. I have honestly no answer as to why this continues to go on.
It is amazing. It's not even secret. It's right out in the open. All right, speaking of out in the open, everyone knows what Twitter did in the last election, censoring all the Hunter Biden stuff along with everything else, getting all the conservative people axed from the thing. But there's something just came out today. Their former head of security says Twitter is actually a security risk too. What did he say? What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, the Twitter has similar, actually all American social medias have similar risks. So he's saying, this is the former head of security who's saying, as you can see on the screen, that Twitter doesn't even know how many bots are on the platform. And that is what hostile foreign governments have tried to use. They've tried to use these bot armies to manipulate the discourse in America, because they can disguise certain commentators that are actually just Russian bots, Chinese bots, as regular Americans. And you'd have to go through a lot of effort to sort of find out that they're not. But they can manipulate the discourse. They can send tweets in, weighing in one way or the other. And one of the things for all of the left's hyperbolic rhetoric about, hyperbolic rhetoric is an understatement, the way that they treated alleged Russian interference in the 2016 election, one thing we did see Russia do is put a lot of money or a decent chunk of change into these silly memes that were like anti-BLM and pro-BLM and anti-trans and pro-trans on Facebook that I don't think manipulated a lot of votes at all whatsoever. But the point is, they know that these are our weaknesses. They know that identity politics are our weaknesses. And in the same way that that China could be playing those up with TikTok, these bots can use Twitter to do the exact same thing, to pit Americans against each other. We don't need much help doing that these days, but they can absolutely fuel it with the bots. And Twitter not having really any grasp at how widespread this is on the platform, completely inexcusable, another national security risk. And there doesn't seem to be any end in sight.
Emily, you have a piece up, great piece. I would invite people to go look at it. Calling social media a public health emergency? Why? I mean, everyone has it, basically. Virtually everyone watching me has some form of it, or they know someone who does. What's wrong with it?
we're basically the frogs in the proverbial boiling pot right now, that like we've added all of this technology with the assumption that technology is it equates to progress and everything. It's like it's advancement and progress. We use those words around technology a lot. So we've just accepted some of these apps and websites into our lives. Facebook was supposed to bring us all much closer together. The bulk of the research is now showing that it's making us less healthy in a number of ways. It makes us fatter. It makes us less mentally healthy. It makes us more hateful of each other. It makes us less connected, more divided, just basically across the board. And it's not like just cigarettes, right? So cigarettes, it's something that you smoke, but it's not something that you are transferring the vast majority of your political discourse, your personal life, and your professional life onto, which is happening with all of these apps, whether they're Gmail, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat. Young people like use them very differently than older people do in some cases. They actually make their plans on these apps. They do personal, professional work on Slack, on Signal, and all of these different things, which are designed as dopamine slot machines. And that is a public health emergency to the extent that our personal, professional, political lives are now being conducted on slot machines. It's making us worse across the board. And just because we've accepted it really quickly and because it's so integrated into our lives, that doesn't mean we can't do anything about it. It's just really time for us to start treating it as serious as it really is.
That's sharp. Emily, come back soon. I appreciate you.
Thanks so much, Jesse.
All right. Speaking of social media and poison, maybe you were wondering where James Lindsay has been. If you happen to be on Twitter and followed him, as I did, he's one of the great anti-communist thinkers of our time, and he's gone. What happened? We'll ask James about that next. Before we ask James about that, though, you need to go buy some gold from Oxford Gold Group, because I believe we're going into a Great Depression, and God only freaking knows how bad it's going to get. I don't know. I wish I could sit here and tell you. I know I joke about being the Oracle, right? But that's obviously not true. I'm just being obnoxious. I don't know how bad this is going to get. Remember, it's not like we're right on the cusp of a major victory, even if we take back the House or something in November. Biden's still president. Globally, we still have the UN working with the WEF, trying to hurt us. How bad does it get when they're trying to hurt us? I don't know. I don't have any idea. But I do know this. There's no downside to buying gold, to having gold coins in your physical possession. Maybe they save the life of you and your family one day. Maybe you never need them at all. Maybe they sit in your safe and collect dust, but you'll never look at them and say, dang, that was dumb, ever. Having gold from Oxford Gold Group helps me sleep better at night. It does, when I look at all the crappy news of the day. Call them, tell them Jesse told you to call. 833-995-GOLD. Don't do anything drastic. I'm not telling you that. They're really laid back. I trust these guys. I sent my own father there. All right? 833-995-GOLD, Oxford Gold Group. We'll be back. What are we all about? Anti-communism, right? One of the people I learn the most from out there is James Lindsay. Obviously, you know James. He's from newdiscourses.com. He also wrote the book Race Marxism, but he is one of the leading anti-communists in this country. And I spend some time on Twitter now and then. I've enjoyed James's takes, but I haven't seen very much of him. James, you been on vacation or what, buddy? Where you been?
I died. Rip me, R.I.P. James. Yeah, they sniped me. My account has been suspended. As you can see, they permanently removed me from Twitter for beating a leftist at a word game, which is not allowed.
Okay, elaborate. What happened?
Well, as my shirt says, I don't know if you guys can see, it says, okay, groomer. So I was calling these leftists who are sexualizing our children, these communist manipulators, I was calling them groomers because they're doing cult ideological grooming. There's some okay groomer going on. I was calling them groomers, and I got knocked out of Twitter for 12 hours. I got a slap on the wrist. I got told I was a bad boy. And so I came back on and I said, okay, child sexualization specialist, the one of them, thinking that you could avoid the G word. And that apparently infuriated them because they permanently removed me from Twitter.
Good for you. Okay. You're gone from Twitter. Obviously, you're not going to be gone from this movement. What's it been like? Has it been good? Has it been terrible? Do you feel silenced? Do you feel reinvigorated?
I feel great. It's really funny. It's almost like I got like this splash of water in my face. It's like Twitter's not real. And we only like kind of pay attention to Twitter because we all pretend that it's real and that it's important. And people say, well, so many people talk on there. But the matter of fact is for example, what makes these social media platforms interesting, if you go to Truth Social or you go to Getter or, you know, one of these other platforms that's kind of like a Twitter clone, a conservative kind of haven, they don't feel the same and it's not as fun. And everybody kind of remarks on this. And I don't think it's structural in the sense like the you know, API or however it works. I think it's, in fact, that there's no dynamic. It's not this kind of broad sweeping, you know, everybody mixing it up, differences of opinion kind of all over the place. And so it's like this kind of echo chamber effect. And I think what Twitter's doing is, or what conservatives are doing is they're actually being abused by a platform that's using them to make the platform interesting. And if they just stopped using the platform, then the platform wouldn't be interesting. It would become a leftist hellhole. Normal people would not want to use a leftist activist hellhole, and the whole thing would fall apart. And to be honest with you, I actually think Twitter is doing that on purpose right now. I think that they're, I don't know if you know the story from World War II. I know you're a big war guy, of the sinking of the Bismarck. But if you know, it was disabled by Allied torpedoes, but it wasn't sunk. And it was surrounded, and obviously capturing the Bismarck would have been a very valuable thing. And maybe Elon Musk was going to buy the Bismarck or something. And so they dynamited it from within so that it would sink so that the enemies couldn't capture this super elaborate warship. And I strongly suspect that Twitter, after Elon struck the rudders with a torpedo and made it non-navigable, I think they're trying to sink it from within by removing a lot of that dynamic. And I think conservatives should help them with that just by abandoning the platform entirely and finding out that life is way better without the abusive relationship.
So funny you bring that up, because I have actually been personally agonizing with just that thing for the past couple days. It's funny you bring that up. All right, James, I want you to break something down for me here. You're really good at this. A lot of people get confused about why what they're seeing today is communism. You know, they know about the Soviet Union and Lenin and all that worker crap, but they don't look at climate change nutters or this race trans ideology. They don't look at that as communism. They may think they're weirdos or freaks or something, but they don't make the connection. Explain.
Well, they didn't read what the communists of the 1960s and 1970s were writing. It's just as simple as that. The communists in the 1960s were explicit again and again. They said, well, advanced capitalism, which means when you bar monopolies, advanced capitalism actually works, and it allows people to build a good life, and it doesn't immiserate the workers. So Marx's revolution is never going to come from the workers. So we have to abandon the workers and go to somebody else. And who can you agitate into wanting to have a perpetual cultural revolution? And they said racial minorities, sexual minorities, feminists, outsiders. They listed these people. And so they moved into identity politics, and they actually, in divorcing themselves from their need to pretend that they care about workers, they also moved into the corporate sector. They moved into the sectors of the economy, of the society, that they normally were excluded from, like education and, like I said, the corporate sector in particular. And so what you see is this broad-scale attempt. What they figured out at the end of the 1960s was that stability, anything that enables people to feel stable in the middle class particularly, is the enemy of the revolution. And so what they're looking for is ways to destabilize people. And so racial politics, sexualizing children, all these things destabilize people. And then with the corporate environment, what they're actually doing is, if you look at what they experimented in China with this first, they introduced the market within China to see if the Communist Party could control a market, and it can. And so now they're going to use the market tools to take the West into that same model under the banner of a so-called public-private partnership. And so that they can't see that it's communism is because their data on communism stops in about 1975, and they're not paying attention to what anybody's done ever since. If the communists didn't go away, it's their religion. They're not going to set it down.
James, come back soon, my brother. We need to talk more.
Yeah, 100%. I'd love to.
James Lindsay, everybody. NewDiscourses.com, and read that book, Race Marxism. It will open up your eyes. Communists, to the point he just made, they're not... It's never been about the workers. Communism is always about the destruction of the world. Communists will find the cracks in a society, they will fill them up with water, and they will freeze them. Couldn't appeal to the workers here. Workers had good lives. You had to find every malcontent group and join them together, and that's why you see what you see. All right, we have someone else joining us next, Jack Brewer, a good man doing good things. Going to talk to him. Before we talk to him, talk about your home. your health. When I talk to you about Eden Pure Thunderstorm, I want you to understand I'm not really talking to you about an air purifier. I've had air purifiers my whole life. Those big towers, they sit in the corner and make that loud noise. I've always had those. Eden Pure Thunderstorm is actually not just removing dust. It's killing viruses and mold in the air. That's why it makes any room you put one in, that's why it makes it smell so good. It's not covering up odors. It's killing all the bad stuff in your air. You'll be able to taste how clean your air is. They are miracles. I get email after email thanking me for these things. I own three of them. They have a three-pack for sale for watchers, viewers, I guess, of I'm Right. You have to go to EdenPureDeals.com and use the code Jesse. That will get you a three-pack for $200 off. Some savings, right? EdenPureDeals.com, code Jesse. You get a three-pack for under $200 in free shipping. We'll be back. I'm excited about this. No, not NFL season. You know my thoughts on that. I'm excited about talking to Jack Brewer. Played for my once beloved Giants and just genuinely a wonderful human being who's doing good things out there. He was also on the Federal Commission, the U.S. Commission on Social Status of Black Men and Boys. Jack, NFL season's rolling around the corner, and that used to be appointment television for yours truly. I do not watch anymore for obvious reasons. I just don't. I watch football to get away, man. I watch football to watch all the greatness and the athletes and everything that's wonderful about it. I don't watch to be preached at, and that's what it's become. Has it changed? Is it going to change?
I don't know. I hope so, because I, like you, it's been a while since I've, you know, turned on football and enjoyed a game. And which is sad, obviously, because it played such a big part of my life. But I'm with you on that, man. I think, you know, a sport like football used to represent America. It used to represent, you know, real masculinity and respectful men battling it out on the football field where you could, you know, watch it with your children and gather your family around. And now I don't know what the commercials are going to be like. I don't know what's going to be up in their end zones. And I just don't want to be a part of that.
It's so funny you brought that up, Jack. I can't watch. When I was watching 3 years ago, I had to pause it if I left the room when my sons are there. I don't know what kind of filth they're going to see on the TV. But you brought up masculinity. That's a good point. I was with some folks this weekend at some big event, and some of the ladies were voicing concerns about football. Their sons were playing, you know, knees, heads, all those things. Concerns mothers have. It's fine. One of the guys stepped up and said something I thought was really interesting. He said, ladies, you got to understand, we're going to need football players if we have any chance for the future of this country. We need the football teams and wrestling teams to stay right where they are, because those are kind of the last bastions of masculinity, in, at least in high school, in the society we have left.
It really is. You know, I always said I didn't want my son to play football just because I had so many violent hits and concussions. And now, man, as I'm seeing this weak, soft society come about, man, starting to change my mind a little bit. I completely agree with that analysis, man. It's like everything about toughness, everything about mental toughness and masculinity is just being stripped and robbed from this generation of kids. And it's really scary, baby, because you see the real impacts in our streets. And, you know, you go to the airports or you go to a mall, or walk around various neighborhoods, and you just see this feminine spirit that has taken over the hearts and minds of too many young boys.
It's a fact. Jack, is it intentional? I consider it an assault on masculinity in this country. If you even see anything masculine now, someone will call it toxic masculinity. But is it intentional, or is this just the result of getting rich, you know, as a country overall? I realize not everyone's rich, but as a country, we got rich and fat and bored and soft. What is it, intentional or not?
I think it's people hiding from accountability. You know, when you have masculinity and you have order, right? You have an order of command. You have accountability. You know, you got to get up in the morning. You got to do things. Men, you have a responsibility and a goal you got to handle. And I think when you start blurring those things on both sides for men and women, now it's blurry. You know, you can choose to do whatever you want, and you can take care of things you want. You can work if you want to work. I mean, I remember a day that you weren't a man if you didn't get up and go to work. But now lazy men have an out. So they made it easy. This is a society about appeasing everybody, and everyone wants to be appeased. So I think that's what's really at the root of this. And I do think it's intentional. I think you can get people to vote your way. You can get people to support your causes if you tell them that they don't need to value accountability.
Jack, faith. I've noticed, of course, white supremacy and Nazism were kind of those are the words the communists fell in love with over the past four, five, 6 years, and those are obviously still there, but there's a new one that I see popping up all over the place, Christian nationalism, Christo-fascism, various versions of that. I'm not surprised. Obviously, they've been at war with Christianity, at war with God for some time. Now it's just kind of naked and laid out there, and frankly, Jack, I'm ready for it.
So am I, man. I tell you what, you know, this is kind of that last battle for this leftist movement, is to try to somehow paint Christians as being this cultish group that are dangerous, right? They're going to start seeing that Christians are dangerous in the way that we think and feel. But there's one thing that they cannot ever dispute, and that's the word of God in the Bible. And so when we are followers of Christ and we use the Bible as our truth, right, this is where the battle was supposed to go. That's what scripture tells us. And right now, I'm ready for the left to try to fight that battle, because they've been able to do it in schools, in public schools. They've been able to do it in many parts of society. And even now with this administration, in our government, in our military, you see all these things that they're pushing that go against the truths of the Bible. They've been able to accomplish that. But they haven't been able to completely penetrate the true Christian. And I think we are the next that are going to be under attack. We will be persecuted for his name. And I think it's a time for all of us to stand strong, because we know that we're on the winning side of this fight. And so I'm like you, Jesse. I'm looking forward to this battle, because I will be carrying my cross. And I will not shy away from proclaiming the name of Jesus Christ anywhere that I go.
Good man. Jack, I wish I could say I had the same confidence in the pastors in this country. Now, I'm not indicting all pastors, obviously, but I see where we've gone as a nation. I mean, we're talking about boys cutting their penises off now. I see where we've gone as a nation, and I look at that as partially, maybe mainly, a failure of the church. Jack, how in the world did we really turn our other cheek all the way into this filth? Is that what we did?
We did. You know, the love of money is the root of all evil. And I think, you know, the churches have fell victim to what the word says, is they've let that root penetrate their hearts and minds. And so just to appease their congregations and to kind of stay away from the battlefield in which Christ told us to enter, you know, they've sold their souls. They've sold their souls for money and to fill up their pews and to try to get this prosperity gospel preached versus the true gospel. And it's a sad thing, because, you know, many of these battles no one else can fight, man. I go into the prisons almost every week, and no one can fight those battles. If you don't have a spiritual presence in places like that, if you don't have a spiritual presence in many of these communities that are confused with this fatherlessness crisis, man, people are robbing and stealing and just don't value life anymore. All of those issues must be fought by the church. And if you don't have that in a community, the results are what they are now. And what we see is people just have completely lost their mind. And so, yes, I think this is all pointing back to a failure of the church and men of God and women of God. And I say men of God because men are primarily the ones that are preaching the gospel and overseeing these flocks. And they're just not doing their job and their responsibility to uphold the word of God in truth and be the example of accountability. But unfortunately, they will be judged a double or triple portion, as the Bible says. I mean, when you're called to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ and to oversee a flock, then if you turn your back on God, then your wrath will multiply.
Jack Brewer, before we go, please, would you let everybody know about this wonderful organization you have where you're out there mentoring kids? Kids need a strong male role model, man. Every single one of them does. Can you tell people about your organization if they want to go support it? Because I love it.
Definitely. Thank you, Jesse. It's the JackBrewerFoundation.org, thejackbrewerfoundation.org. Our foundation is growing. We got so many fatherless kids. I actually, man, I just adopted my first kid, and I almost get tears in my eyes just thinking about it. Just it's such a huge blessing, man. And as conservatives push for life, let's not remember that that also comes with a call of action and a call for all of us to go out and adopt these kids and give solutions to all these mothers that are now having their children when otherwise they would not have. It's a time for the church to stand up, brother.
Amen. God bless you, brother. Jack, come back soon, man.
God bless you, brother.
That's a good man right there. That's a good organization. Go look at the things the Jack Brewer Foundation does, changing lives. That's good stuff. All right, we got Light in the Mood coming up. It's a good one. Real quick, where do you get your health insurance? And I'm not passing judgment. I've had all kinds of health insurance. You know, I've had 1,000 different jobs and careers in this life, so I've had a bunch of them. I've had them through my employer. I've had them individually, and they've virtually all been terrible. I mean, as far as the values go, coverage has been fine, but the values have been terrible. OneShare Health is changing all that. What if you could put your money where your morals are with your health insurance? It's a faith-based insurance company. You have one of those? 5% of your monthly goes to veterans struggling with PTSD. They believe in giving back. Coverage is still great. Prices are outstanding. All the options you need, vision, dental, the telehealth, whatever you need. Go to my.oneshareHealth.com/Kelly, promo code Jesse Kelly. All right? We'll be back. All right. I miss Donald Trump sometimes. Maybe you love him, maybe you hate him, but overall, he was a good president, and daggone, he made me laugh. He just has a way of making me laugh. One of the great, most underrated, underreported Trump moments from his presidency. I'll bring it to you in a second. Before we get to that, your home that you own, it's wonderful. I'm glad you own a home. I own a home. It's a good thing. It's also, without question, your biggest financial vulnerability. And I know what you're probably saying, Jesse, I pay my bills. I pay my mortgage. Okay, I do too. Home title theft means that's null and void. These home title thieves, these scumbags, they spend all their time browsing the internet looking for home titles because they're all online, right? They just have to hack into the cloud and they get them. They forge your signature on them. It looks real. Believe me, they did it to me. And then they take them to a bank and they start taking loans out against your home. 4, 5 loans. You don't know. They take off with the money and you start getting late notices in the mail. Why aren't you paying back your loan? You'll dismiss it, you'll ignore it, you'll chuck it, and then they'll evict you from your home. Go to HomeTitleLock.com and sign up today. They will detect any tampering on your home and shut it down like that. HomeTitleLock.com, all right? All right. You remember when Trump met with Kim of North Korea and made fun of him for being fat?
Getting a good picture of everybody so we look nice and handsome and thin.
Beautiful.
That's so savage. I'll see you tomorrow.
Each morning, the President of the United States receives a highly classified briefing on the most important issues facing the country. It's called the President's Daily Brief, or PDB. It's delivered by America's spies and analysts. Well, now you can hear your very own PDB in the form of a podcast hosted by me, Brian Dean Wright, a former CIA operations officer. Each morning at 6 a.m. Eastern, I'll bring you 15 to 20 minutes of the most important issues facing the country, giving you the critical intelligence and analysis you need to start your morning.
In an era of escalating social unrest and rising crime rates, safeguarding our families has never been more critical. Introducing the Byrna Less Lethal Pistol Launcher. Byrna offers a safer, sensible alternative that can save lives on both ends, protecting the user and delivering formidable stopping power to deter aggressors. Legal in all 50 states with no background checks or permits required. And it's shipped directly to your door. Visit Byrna.com/Jesse to get 10% off your purchase.
Hey everyone, this is Jimmy O'Brien from John Boy Media. I want to quickly tell you about my podcast. It's called Jimmy's Three Things. Episodes come out every Tuesday, and for 30 minutes, I dive into three stories in Major League Baseball that I want to talk about, or I do a stat deep dive. Sometimes I create my own stats. It gets weird. It's now your go-to podcast for staying up to date and in the weeds with Major League Baseball. No topic is off limits or too small. Bad umpires, great pitcher-catcher duos, new rules, old rules, three things that I want to talk about. Listen to Jimmy's Three Things on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Joe Gatto.
I'm Steve Byrne.
We are Two Cool Moms.
We certainly are.
And guess where we could find us now?
Oh, I don't know. The iHeart Podcast Network?
That's right. We're an official iHeart podcast, and I'm super excited about it.
I am too. I thought Two Cool Moms was such a fun podcast, but now it's even more funner and cooler and heartier.
That's right. It's more iHeartier.
I knew it! Check your heart rate. We're here at iHeart.
Yeah, you can find us wherever you listen to your podcasts or on the iHeart Radio app.
We think of Franklin as the doddering dude flying a kite in the rain.
Benjamin Franklin is our subject for a new season with Walter Isaacson.
He's the most successful self-made business person in America.
A printer, a scientist, founding father, but maybe not the guy we think we know.
Franklin casts his lot on the side of revolution, and it's another thing that splits the family apart.
Listen to On Benjamin Franklin with Walter Isaacson on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.